afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really grateful you tuned in today because it's a special day. Once a month, we have Dr. Troy Spurl of Synapse Center for Health and Healing on the show. We call it Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. Love to take your questions because we want to see you healthy and whole. It's amazing how connected our mind, body, spirit is, our emotions are to our physiology, and Dr. Troy addresses all those things. It's just fantastic. So can we hear from you? 877-933-2484. Debbie's been holding for a bit, and Al, you're up next. Hey, Debbie, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Thanks. Yeah, I just had a comment. Listening to these women talk about fatigue, something that has helped me. I'm 46 and living in Iowa, have always struggled with the winter depression. So this is the first winter I tried vitamin D supplements to fight that winter depression. Mm. And what I also found is that it really took care of the fatigue that usually comes with that.
Wow.
And also fought the winter weight gain. You know, I'm clean eating and exercise and pretty ideal weight, but the extra roll that usually comes with the winter hibernation tendency, I just feel like vitamin D has really helped that. And then I have another question after this, but I wondered if Dr. Troy could comment on that. Is that something you usually recommend?
He's nodding.
That's a great, definitely. That is a great comment, because vitamin D, especially up north here, we become deficient, and it can cause seasonal affect disorder and lower moods, but also that affects our energy, and quite a bit of people become more and more depressed and physically depressed or fatigued in the wintertime. So yeah, that's an awesome comment, and you are not alone. We recommend that 100%, and there's a lot of people north of Atlanta that are vitamin D deficient. And even in the summertime nowadays, because of the use of sunscreen and other things like that. But vitamin D is one of my staples. Almost everyone who comes through the clinic, we check vitamin D. So, Debbie, that is an awesome aha.
Mm-hmm. And you had a question for Doc?
I do. I have a 10-year-old son who he started out with atopic eczema when he was really young, like 3 months old. And I think that might have started after he had a really bad chest cold, you know, ended up being on steroids for his lungs kind of thing. So he's always had this reactive airway disease and kind of eczema type symptoms. Another symptom he has is extremely bad toenail fungus, and has had that for, you know, since he was maybe four. And I'm wondering if those are related. I have speculations about candida being a culprit. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you're really good at this, Debbie.
Dr. Debbie.
Dr. Debbie's
just,
nailing it.
We're just deemed you a Dr. Debbie.
Yeah, the first thing that popped in my mind is candida and fungal. And so, and did you say you were from Iowa?
I am. Yeah.
So one of the other things just in particular with Iowa is that there's a lot of communities there where corn is grown, and a lot of communities where there's corn have fungal issues, because corn itself is a fungal. It actually... fungus grows within the corn. So a lot of that gets actually put into the air. And even if you're miles away at times, you're breathing in a lot of that. And so, so the fungus, the toenail fungus is a big part of it. That's a good clue for you. You can actually get him tested to see, but I'd keep going down that candida path, because I think you're bang on with that. And a lot of times once we have a cold, if there's stuff in our air that we're breathing in that has any fungal component and you've been put on antibiotics, that predisposes your new environment to having a fungal or mold start to creep in there. So fungus and mold are the first two places I'd look at and start. So you're bang on with your thinking there, and you really didn't need me at all on this one, Debbie.
But I'm super glad you called, Debbie. Dr.
Yes.
Debbie. All right. Al's checking in from Coon Rapids. Hey, Al, you've been holding. Now he gets the award for the longest hold. Thank you, sir. You're on the air with Dr. Troy.
Okay. Hi, Susie. Hey. Hi, Dr. Troy.
Hi, Al.
My question type is, have you, or can you comment on fasting, probably specifically water-only fasting long-term for helping your ailments and, you know, the benefits of that? And just wanted to hear what you would have to say about that.
I'm actually a huge fan of fasting, and we know both biblically and medically there's a lot of benefits from that. As you fast, your body is going to start to look for energy coming from other stores. So it's really important you got to keep your water levels up, because if we don't keep the water levels up, then you're not going to be able to get the immune system mobilized to help get you the energy that it needs. Now, you have to look at what reserves you do have. So I always encourage people to go into a fast with reserves. And the more toxic we are, the more you'll see stuff come out. We've had many, many people doing long-term water fasts where it started getting almost mucus and discoloration coming out through their skin, their urine, their bowels, those types of things. So very, very important to make sure you do this with someone. I always encourage people. They have fasting centers where you can stay at the fasting center for fast longer than 10 days. There's 10, 20, and there's even some books out there that talk about 40-day fasts. And, of course, we know what Jesus did. But a lot of times when you fast, it's quite remarkable what happens. You go through these phases of detox and then restoration, and you do get clear. And so a lot of times through history, a lot of Christians have fasted to get a better connection to God. And that does happen as far as just clear thought, and but there's also a lot of challenges there. So hard to do it with a still working and going through your life. My father-in-law, he's passed on now, but my father-in-law was a pastor of a church, and he would go and go into a camper in the backyard. And my wife talks about this all the time. And he would just sit there and fast and do water fasts. And she would see him. He'd have two things: his Bible. Hmm. And his water.
What a memory for her.
Yes. You know? And so she remembers him doing that and then coming to the house. And he was just, it was all about just connecting with God. Oh. And so he wasn't doing it for health reasons, but there was health
benefits
from mm-hmm. doing that. So I'm a huge fan of fasting. And if you can't do the water, extended water fast, it's okay to just start with intermittent fasting and start there, because just the word, if you take the word breakfast, it literally means breaking the fast. And that's how we're supposed to do. We're supposed to give our digestive system a break. And stress 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago in Jesus' time was famine, was no food. We live in a different type of stress right now. We have an excessive amount of food and bad food that we have to cleanse ourselves of. So I'm a huge fan of fasting done properly. If you have medical conditions, make sure you do it in concert with a professional who knows what they're doing. And if you are doing it, try and do it with someone else as well, or at least let them know what you're doing so they can come check on you.
Yeah, it's exactly. Be so awesome if we all had a camper out back, because yes. Then you'd know where to find us. All right, Al, thanks for that great question. Bob, now, again, got all these award-winning people because he's been holding for a while. Thanks, Bob, calling in from Minneapolis. You got Dr. Troy here on the air.
Okay, my name is Tom, anyhow.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry about that, Tom.
Okay. I've been in pain with a lot of pain and, from peripheral neuropathy. I was diagnosed with peripheral neuropathy, and I have diabetes. And I was wondering if I could do anything for peripheral neuropathy, nerve damage, feet, pain in the feet.
Yeah, peripheral neuropathy is pretty challenging if we don't get on top of the diabetes. So the first thing is to try and halt the diabetes, and using insulin and metformin and other medications usually is where they'll start. It's still really important to work with your diet to really minimize the highs and the lows as far as insulin. I know it can be managed and everything, but it's very important to start to correct that. A lot of the peripheral neuropathy, the damage is done. It's hard to get that back. There are different tools out there that can be used, frequency-specific microcurrent, infrared saunas, different things to start to work on the area to get blood flow and circulation to the area. So there are things you can do. It's very, very challenging. There are certain B vitamins that help, but they only help if we can actually get your immune system and the circulation to that area. So peripheral neuropathy is one where I need a little bit more information as far as background health and what you're actually doing to manage the diabetes. But really work on correcting the digestive system, get your B vitamins up, and then there are some strategies that you can even start implementing at home as far as increasing circulation to the feet. And there are some clinics that that will work on initiating that process. It's a tough one, but you've got to get the diabetes and the digestive system under control first and make sure that you're actually absorbing some key nutrients. There is no easy fix for peripheral neuropathy, and most times once the damage is done, we don't have a lot of success bringing it back.
Mm. Bob, God bless you. We're going to grab one more question before our quarter-hour break. Amanda, thanks for holding. You're on the air with Dr. Troy.
Yes, I have a 3-year-old who frequently complains of stomach aches, and especially after she eats.
Mm.
And she also has pretty bad eczema and very, very dry, thin hair. And it didn't start off dry and thin like it is now.
Wow.
Okay, so that's a perfect example of one of a few scenarios. In the beginning of the show, we talked about just people with gluten sensitivities, how they can have an inflamed brain, if you will. Anytime you see eczema in someone this young and they have pain after eating, there's one of two scenarios going on. They're either eating a food that they're reacting to and it's causing an inflammatory response, or the stomach is actually caught up on the diaphragm. So if it doesn't matter what the food is, then we have to make sure the stomach is not caught in the diaphragm. It's very, very common for babies to be crying and get the stomach caught in the diaphragm as the digestive system is developing. And then later on, when they're 1, 2, 3 years old, we start to see the problems that you're seeing here, when they can actually start to verbalize and vocalize that they've got some pain there. So it's really important to get that assessed. We call it a functional hiatal hernia. It's not the same as a medical hiatal hernia.
Okay.
It's a functional hiatal hernia. So that can actually be pulled down. It's a gentle technique where they literally traction down on the stomach. Sometimes you even hear a little pop because the stomach gets caught up on the diaphragm. And that's the number one thing that we usually see. And it can be it can make a change within 24 hours. It's so fast.
And if that's stuck, that could still cause eczema, hair coarseness?
Yes, because you're not releasing the stomach acid at the right time.
Oh, wow.
And so what we just talked about earlier about low stomach acid, one of the reasons why kids get put on antacids and acid blockers at this age is because their stomach is caught on the diaphragm. And the cells,
bad for them.
Yes, it's awful because it's such an easy fix if we just pull the stomach down. And it's a timing mechanism with the parietal cells. The parietal cells are the cells of the stomach.
Mm.
They release acid when they're being stretched or they feel pressure against them. And so every time they breathe, that actually could potentially be affecting the parietal cells. So you're getting acid release at the wrong times. So it's a lot of times misinterpreted as a high stomach acid, a weakened valve, and acid reflux
so
in the kids.
Fixable.
And it's so fixable.
We have to pause here. But Amanda, I know you hang with us because I know you have the rest of that question. You have a little bit more to the answer,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
So hang with us, Amanda. We're going to finish that question and answer, and then we're going to talk about Sjogren's, because I keep promising my friend who's listening from New Jersey. And then we've got Anonymous checking in from Plymouth, 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. That song, too. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. It's another edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy, and he joins us every month to take your questions. So Amanda from Fargo is still holding on the line in case we need a follow-up question, but she called in about her 3-year-old daughter who cries after she eats because she has a gut ache. She has eczema, and then she said thinning dry hair. Is that right? And you were saying one of the things could be a functional hiatal hernia where her stomach is up in the diaphragm.
Yes.
And what's unfortunate about that is just a quick adjustment can push that down. You've done that for me before. I mean, I thought I was getting sick. You did that, and I just had energy and felt normal again and was digesting normal again. And the unfortunate reaction to that sometimes is children getting antacids, which creates a whole other problem.
Yeah, I have a child coming to mind. He was actually, I'm going to say 9 or 10 at the time, was put on an antacid at 1, 1.5, and so been suffering with that for many years. And one treatment, it restored and everything was good, and his symptoms were gone, and he never had to take it again, the antacid, and other things started to clear up. So what happens is the stomach gets caught up, the stomach acid timing mechanism gets thrown off, and you can start to not absorb things properly. If you get put on antacid, that can interfere with it again as well, but it can happen even without the antacid. And the same thing as we were talking about before, we can start to see a decline in key absorption of key minerals, zinc, magnesium, calcium, iron, and iodine, some of the key ones that help with that need a good solid stomach acid. So the dry thinning hair is a sign of that. Or that's also what happens with just inflammation. Inflammation literally is like a fire within, so it starts to dehydrate us, if you will. So checking for food reactants and pulling the stomach down or going to a – usually it's chiropractors who know how to do that quite well. In Fargo, there's a lot of good ones that know how to do that. And it's very important to check for foods, get the stomach pulled down, make sure that there isn't a hidden infection as well. So sometimes we can get H. pylori or bacterial imbalances that can set that off as well. But it's going to be one of those scenarios. Mm. If there is pain after each meal, there's inflammation or a structural integrity problem. And it is a quick fix as long as there's nothing weird. Sometimes certain infections like viral infections can affect the nerves that go to the digestive system, but we don't suspect that in this case.
Mm. Wow, Amanda, thanks. I hope that helped you. Oh, I'm sorry. Is it number three next? Sorry, one. We're looking at the board here. Got lots of calls coming. Anonymous friends from Plymouth waiting on hold. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I was diagnosed with an autoimmune condition last year. Recently did some blood work, and my hemoglobin came back low, and then was diagnosed with that I don't know how to pronounce them. I'll do my best, but one is mild, normal, chronic, normocystic anemia, and mild, absolute neutropenia. I haven't started a treatment plan yet. Wondering if you have any recommendations or suggestions on some things that I could try.
Yeah, what was the original autoimmune that you were diagnosed with?
MS.
MS, okay. So autoimmune is a, I could talk for a whole weekend on just autoimmune. And this does go in with the Sjogren's conversation here. That's an autoimmune as well. When it comes to autoimmune, it's a confused immune system. So this is a larger conversation. I did write on our website the 8 triggers of autoimmune. And so my short answer is to manage those 8 triggers. Now I'm going to briefly go through just a few points here with that. Autoimmune means confused immune system. When we get confused, it's because we're being overworked. If I'm confused here on the air, it's because I'm not getting enough sleep. I'm overworked. I'm not feeding myself properly. Well, our immune system's the same way. It's a very intelligent immune system. And our immune system needs a few things. It needs vitamin D. It needs omega-3 fatty acids. And it needs glutathione. Those are the three most important things. So when you have MS, you have to make sure those three things are at the most elite optimal levels that you can get them. And that's just the starting out point. Those three things help regulate or the part of our immune system that tells it what to do, where to go, what to attack, what not to attack. Our goal here is to get you out of confusion as far as your immune system, not you in particular. Now, there are 7 other things that play into what can confuse an immune system. So there was a triggering mechanism here with MS. It can be anything from an infection, like virus is the most common. It can be food allergies, intestinal inflammation. It can be estrogen or environmental toxins, estrogen dominance, I should say, or excess hormones, environmental toxins, low vitamin D receptors, and there's one more I'm forgetting off the top of my head, but it can be, stress. The stress is very, very common as well, because stress, whether it be physical or mental, can trigger problems with your immune system. So we want to make sure that you really identify where the breakdown is there. Now, when it comes to autoimmune, we have an entire autoimmune department in our clinic that just looks at those 8 factors and measures them, and it can become very, very complicated. So on air, it's hard to say exactly to give you the guidance, but there's a lot of books out there. One of my favorite ones is an autoimmune story about, it's more with the thyroid, But Dr. Datis Karizian started it years ago with, why do I still have thyroid symptoms when my labs are normal? And it's a conversation about the different things that actually cause autoimmune. Since that book came out, there's many more in the functional medicine realm that talk about what to address and how to address autoimmune. With MS in particular, I'm going to throw out one of my theories. This is what I've seen with many of my MS patients. It's very important to make sure the liver function is working properly. There is a very important methylator in the liver called choline. When you start to, your liver becomes overburdened and you become deficient in this particular chemical in the body, your immune system will go and start to pull choline from the nearest source. The nearest source for choline is in the myelin sheath of your nerves. Now, if you have an egg allergy, do you happen to know if you have an egg allergy?
I don't seem to. I notice that if I eat just regular white eggs, I seem to have like a sensitivity to those. And then I switched over to cage-free brown eggs. And those seem to be, I seem to be fine with those.
Okay. You might want to get checked out because there is a difference. And again, this is just theory based on what I've seen in the last 20 years with a lot of my patients. Many of the MS, not all, but many of them have an actual reaction to eggs. And it's an immune reaction, so you may not even notice any differences with it. But choline is high in egg yolk, and so and in eggs in particular. And so if you have a reaction to the eggs, that you're minimizing your main source of where you get choline, so then the body's got to go look elsewhere in the to go get choline to allow you to detoxify. Because if your liver stops detoxifying, you cannot live long. So this is where we think some of the MS symptoms come from. So getting the foods assessed are very important. Doing a blood test at this point, once you have autoimmune, leaky gut is pretty much a standard assumption. And so with leaky gut, there will be other things that go with it. A very specific autoimmune diet is needed. Almost always you have to avoid gluten and dairy. But it's very important to start on that whole process. There's a lot of work. We tell people it takes 2 to 5 years to get to the point of really managing it, but there is a lot you can do.
And it's worth it. And you start to feel better as you make these tweaks. As we always say, thanks so much for that call. I pray God's best for you. Got another anonymous friend holding from Plymouth. We'll get to you after the break. And talking to Dr. Troy, the phone lines are open. We're taking calls for only one more segment. Then we're going to chat. 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. Hope you're having a really great day. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to our good friend, Dr. Troy Spurl of Synapse Center for Health and Healing. His clinic is located in Eagan, Minnesota. He joins us every month for Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. We're taking these amazing questions. Anonymous friend is checking in from Sioux Falls with a question. Hey, friend, you're on the air with Dr. Troy now.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. About 2 years ago, I went to my doctor. It felt like I had a lump in the base of my throat. And, you know, he right away thought it was acid reflux, even though I didn't feel, you know, the typical acid reflux symptoms. Tried some medication for a while that didn't help. I did go to another doctor who put a scope down my throat just to check to make sure there wasn't something in there. And he said there was some inflammation at the base that didn't have any concerns. And it's just been getting worse. At night I'm fine, but throughout the day, some days are worse than others. Sometimes I feel like I can barely swallow. And I tried doing a food diary, and I can't really pick up on any, you know, gluten or anything that seems to make it worse. I was just wondering if you had any ideas of what I should try next.
Yeah, that is a very good path. You've done a lot of right things there as far as just checking. And if it's not an actual problem with acid reflux, because there still can be some issues. There are a little inflammation. There are some structural scenarios that actually impact that. So we get something called cervical imbrication, and it can happen from stress or even muscle tension. And so if you're walking throughout the day and that seems to trigger it, there's one of two things. Again, we talked about this a little earlier in the show with what's called a functional hiatal hernia. Anything that tractions down on the throat or airway can cause it. There's a sleep disorder, the upper airway resistance syndrome, where the muscles in the front get tight. One way to check this is just if you look in the mirror and just stand with your arms down to your side, just see if one shoulder is above the other one or if one shoulder is slightly rotated forward compared to the other one, and then turn sideways and see if, or have someone else take a picture of you to see if your head is a little bit farther forward compared to the shoulders. If you have what we call anterior head carriage, where it's just a little bit ahead, and if there's any type of problems with that imbalance, then there could be a structural component where your neck has been altered, causing some muscle spasms there or that feeling. A lot of times it doesn't even have to be in that area. It can actually be a spasm on the back of your neck at the head. So if you have headaches, if there's history of a car accident or trauma even years ago, that can start to slowly set up the scenario of that feeling of the lump in the throat, and it can come from, it's a neurologic component as well. So structurally is usually the first place we start there. Once they've ruled out an actual problem, we can take a look at that. We want to make sure the thyroid is okay, so doing a thyroid ultrasound. Even doctors, a lot of times we can palpate the thyroid. It can be very challenging to actually detect if there's a problem there. So a cyst on the thyroid can also set up that same scenario. And parathyroid problems can also do the same thing. You'll usually find parathyroid, though, with increased calcium in the blood. And so I would start with the structural if there's any type of history there. If there's headaches history, for sure, that could be a part of it. And one last thing, strangely enough, sinus conditions can also set up this scenario. So the muscles on the front of the neck can get tighter and tighter when there's sinus problems, and sometimes you don't even know you have lower sinus irritation. So you can do some sinus rinsing and see if the lump goes away. Sinuses usually, though, nighttime it's a little bit worse. So when people say they've got that lump in the throat and they notice it more during the day when you're upright, that's usually a structural problem. And believe it or not, it can actually come from a left hip that's too tight.
Wild.
That is causing a counter rotation in the shoulders. So you'll see it in the mirror when you look in the shoulders. So there's a lot of variables. If I had a little bit more time to ask you specific questions, we can narrow it down again. Mm. But generally speaking, when it's during the day, we're almost always thinking it's more structural and physical than it is the other components. So
wow. Oh, may God bless you. That's maddening to feel like you've got a lump in your throat. Bless you. Rebecca, checking in from St. Paul. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have more of a theoretical question. I've heard Christians, non-Christians alike talk about like different food theories and relate them to God and the human condition. Like humans were never designed to eat meat or milk or dairy. And then I just think about all the scriptures that are really in relation to those things. And even Dr. Sebi has like fruits and vegetables that were never designed for people to eat, supposedly. So I just was curious if either of you have an opinion or perspective in terms of God's original plan for humans and nutrition.
Yeah, I love this question. I'm sure Dr. Susie's going to answer it before I get this out of my mouth. So I'm going to talk real fast here. I think she likes this one too.
Well, I just like the either of you part of that question. Yes. But anyway, keep going.
Well, I'm going to talk from two places here. When I've read the Bible, I've seen that God put the animals on this planet for us to eat. So that is a part of what we actually read in Genesis. I've also seen parts where they have the Daniel diet, where he talks about eating clean vegetables, and he was more on the vegetarian side of things, and that cleaned his mind, and he was stronger than everyone else. And in real life, here in my world, with dealing with patients, my healthiest patient is a vegan, and my most unhealthy patient is a vegan. And so I have people who eat meat and are extremely healthy. And I have people that are vegetarians and they're extremely healthy. know your body, and there's reasons why certain people can't tolerate meat. Sometimes that's the way they're made. Sometimes there's actual dysfunction there. So my personal philosophy is we are made to eat meat. If you choose not to, that's 100% okay. Make sure you get your protein from the vegetables. Just do it well. Either way, if you eat meat, you have to also watch all the other stuff that goes with it. You can't overeat it and eat too much fat, eat too much sugar, and all those other things. So like we said before at the beginning of the show, I'm not sure if you were listening at that part of it, but the food itself is a blessing. And so all food, and that includes the animals for us to eat and the vegetables and the fruit and the grains for us to eat, are our blessings. When God has made it, if God's made it, it's good. If man has altered it, just be careful. Use discernment. And so I've seen all food be good. I've also seen all food potentially be bad for us.
Wow, great. Thanks, Rebecca, for that question. Last question before we kind of pick up our conversation. John is checking in from Minnetonka. Hey, John, you're on with Dr. Troy.
Hello, Paul.
Yes.
My question is, about 3 years ago, I was diagnosed with Grover's disease. Are you familiar with that?
I am not familiar with Grover's disease. Tell me about that.
Okay, Grover's disease is the little red bumps that you get on your chest and your back. It's supposedly an autoimmune disease also. I was just wondering if there's anything that they claim that there's really no cure for it. And they can be very, very itchy. And supposedly men, and I'm over 50, that it happens quite often in men over 50, but on your chest and your back, you tend to get these bumps, these red itchy bumps all the time.
So I'm going to speak just from an autoimmune perspective. The one area I tend not to treat a lot are dermatologic scenarios. We refer out for that, but autoimmune scenarios we do treat. When it comes to any type of autoimmune, it's very important, again, to work on your confused immune system. So if digging into Grover's a little bit, if it affects men more than women, there's a hint in there. So again, just to go over autoimmune real quickly, vitamin D, fish oil, or omega-3 fatty acids, and glutathione, the most important part to just get settled. When it comes through the skin, that is a direct sign that that we have to work on the digestive system and the liver system. When you get the digestive system balanced with good bacteria and you get the liver system and the lymph system working well, the skin tends to heal. Now, the reason why they say it's not curable is because with autoimmune, they just don't feel autoimmune is curable right now. And that's mostly true. We've actually seen reversals in a lot of cases, but not enough to say definitively that we can make and alter changes in all autoimmune. However, what I would continue to work on is improving the digestive system, making sure you're having regular bowel movements, making sure the good bacteria is restored, avoiding the inflammatory and triggering food, make sure the liver and lymph system is good, fix the vitamin D and the fish oil, and glutathione, and that's a good place to start. There are books on autoimmune disorders as far as how to treat from a functional perspective. That's where you can start. And when you have any type of itching type scenario, there is a really good diet. It's an autoimmune histamine diet, because there's a connection between itching and histamine and the liver system. So look up the low histamine diet, and that's a first place to start. If you're itching and your skin improve, then that is something you can have in your toolbox until you start to work on the underlying autoimmune scenario.
Wow, so helpful. Thanks, John. Okay, Sjogren's. What is it and what can you tell us?
Well, Sjogren's is also autoimmune, so it's along the same conversation. And you can gather from our callers, too, there's a lot of autoimmune out there. We're seeing more and more of it because our immune system is becoming more and more confused because we're exposed to more and more chemicals and more things that our immune system has to clean up and work on and get rid of. So Sjogren's is just another autoimmune where your immune system has created antibodies, but in this one in particular, it affects more the face, the eyes, dry mouth, and the salivary glands. So other than what we just talked about, as far as really making sure you improve the digestive system, getting the fish oil, vitamin D and glutathione levels back up, you also want to start to improve blood flow and circulation to the head, neck, and face, basically. You want to make sure you're getting lots of water and blood flow to those areas. So doing massages, putting on oils, essential oils through the face and the skin help, and cranial work or relaxation massage or anything that helps improve
exercise.
Blood flow. Absolutely exercise, mm-hmm. deep breathing exercise, opening up the sinuses. We want to stimulate these areas. Now, if there's damage done to the glands, not much you can do to that or for that. But if you can measure your antibodies in lab work and then start to work on down-regulating those antibodies, which we have seen over a couple years, it does take a long time, then if the glands have any normal function left, you can start to use them again. If, however, they've been permanently damaged, you have to use water in the mouth and eye drops to take over that function. So with that one in particular, it's the only difference with that, just like with MS, there was a specific liver scenario we want people to pay attention to with Sjogren's. It's all about getting the blood flow to the area and making sure there's no sinus infection or tooth infection. So a lot of time, hidden teeth infection sets up that whole scenario.
Could Marcon's play into that?
Marcon's can play into that. Hmm. Root canals with infections can play into that. Dental caries and other things that go unaddressed can play into that as well. So biologic dentists can do a lot to help with that if there's an infection. But ruling that stuff out is very important. And, you know, these things take time, effort, and money to start to get through this process. And it's complicated. But you want to specifically focus on the areas of the face and the head to make sure there's no infection and no abnormalities there physically and structurally.
Thanks. We're going to pause for our last break. When we come back, our producer has a question for Dr. Troy about vegetables. And we're going to continue just and wrap this conversation around environmental toxins, food toxins, and their impact on the brain, the emotions, and relationships. Doc has more to say about that. Talking to Dr. Troy Spurl, I'm Suzy Larson, and we'll be back in a minute. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Suzy Larson. This is Live the Promise. Our good friend Dr. Troy is in studio with us. Dr. Troy Spurl of Synapse Center for Health and Healing, which his clinic is located in Eagan, Minnesota. We know we've got friends listening in all over the world. And Doc, we just appreciate you always pouring time into our listeners. You're a good friend. So we've got a question from our producer today, and he's usually a man of few words, so I appreciate that he's got a good question. Yeah.
We've been talking a lot about fruits and vegetables, and I'm just kind of curious, how many different kinds of fruits and vegetables should we be eating? And then, what are the best ones to include, like the ones everybody should be eating?
Great question.
Yeah, I love this question because there was a time when my answer would be very different, because in the last 120-plus years, we've had a lot more industry, and that industry has helped us move faster and do things differently. And we call it progression. But one of the other challenges that comes with that is just the onslaught of new chemicals that have been generated. And so generally speaking, there's about 1,100 new chemicals every year that are added to our environment. And the FDA can't even assess more than a handful.
Where are those coming from?
From industry. So from new products. For example, here in Minnesota and Wisconsin along the border, they have found that we have fish and small animals that are starting to have both male and female parts because of chemical runoff from industry here. And so and a lot of good companies, but they have chemicals. Some of them have been fined for it because it's in excess.
Wow.
But they're starting to look at that. In Wisconsin, they had five-legged frogs years back, an increase in five-legged frogs. And so what we're seeing is these chemicals starting to mimic hormones in our body, and then we get a lot of confusion from that. My original verse was 2 Corinthians, but I'm afraid that just as Eve was deceived by the serpent's cunning, your minds may be somehow led astray from your sincere and pure devotion to Christ. So we could be eating food that we think is good for us, and it could be loaded with chemicals that are altering our hormones.
Causing
and
confusion.
Ultimately causing confusion, which is not of God.
Mm.
And the confusion, it can play with what we feel about ourselves. It can play with our self condemnation. It can play with our male and female side of who we are. My daughter is a coach, a life coach that works with women primarily, but talks a lot about how men are made and women are made. And there's a lot of confusion out there, and she really works with them on that side of just really being a man if you're a man, and being a woman if you're a woman, and what that looks like and everything, because people were starting to lose that, and our food supply is a part of that. So to get back to your question on that, is maybe 200 years ago, we were talking about 4 servings of vegetables, and a serving is basically the size of the fist of your hand, would be enough in a day and plenty to really get forward, because our soil was more rich with nutrients. Our vegetables were more rich with those nutrients. But nowadays, we're really talking about 9 to 18 servings a day. Now, I actually don't know anyone who gets that amount. So that's where supplementation has started to come into play. That's where green drinks have started to come into play. And some of them are very, very important. For example, you asked what kind of vegetables and fruits you would be eating. And that's that's probably a 1-month-long conversation. But I'll give you an example of broccoli, because broccoli has a component in it called indole-3-carbinol, which helps block the conversion of estrogen into the cancer-causing estrogen. So if we have enough indole-3-carbinol, it can help us, even if we're genetically supposed to, breast cancer from estrogen.
Interesting.
So wow. The reality is, a lot of times the solution for a lot of what's going on and what ails us comes from our food.
Hmm.
We just need higher doses of it right now because we have a higher burden. We have a higher environmental toxic burden. And it's hard for people to really have discernment unless they dive in and dig into it, which is what I'm here doing and what I'm asking people to do. Because when you feel a way that you feel, that's real to you. But if it's altered because all of a sudden if we've slipped a medication, a drug, or some illicit something wrong, and that's just the way – that's what you're used to, you're going to think that's your norm. But it's not necessarily your norm. If you're being exposed to something that's altering your mindset, then that's when the enemy is doing what he wants to do. He's taking God's good and he's altering it. And so that's where we start to see a lot of confusion with our immune systems, and that's why it starts attacking our own body. That's why we're seeing a lot of confusion in relationships as far as men and women and not being able to communicate properly to each other, with each other. And that's why it becomes a little confusing on, you know, how much do we need to eat and why? Because the reality is we're losing that battle for the most part because of our exposure. Now, there are a few exceptions. The younger you are, the better you are at getting rid of toxins and storing toxins. And when that system starts to break down, it starts to store it in your best insulator in your body, which is fat. So then we see epidemics of people eating right and exercising and not losing weight because they're too toxic because of the amount of exposures. So eating clean food is very important. Get as many vegetable servings in as you can.
And what are your favorites in addition to broccoli?
I love spinach, broccoli, kale, lettuce. I'm a salad guy. I do like cauliflower. And especially if you love mashed potatoes, you can do so much with cauliflower that actually tastes pretty darn close to it. So I'm a huge fan of that. I love herbal greens on top of anything. So cilantro, basil, oregano, so much good value and nutrient
support. So there's good value in putting real basil and oregano?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he likes it.
Yeah. Yes, I'm sorry. I'm salivating all over the mic right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, you know, it's so interesting. We've talked about this before, but in the context of this conversation, it may surprise people that you might be irritable or anxious or whatever because of something in your food.
Yes, something in your food or the food itself. So people who have wheat sensitivities will literally lower their dopamine levels. So they have less joy and pleasure in life.
Wow.
People have dairy sensitivities. It will affect their serotonin levels. They have more depression and more anxiety. people who have problems with sugar imbalance and stress, they will have problems with a brain chemical called GABA, which makes us worry more. So a lot of these things set up patterns in our life as far as how we think and how we communicate to others. And if you're more reactive in life, then that's going to affect your relationships, not just with other people, but with yourself and with the Lord. So it becomes very, very important to be mindful of what we're putting in our mouth and take a look at what we're doing. One of the things that we were just talking about with the doctors at the clinic was Dr. Amber's there, and we're looking at just doing some shows on food, cooking meals, and then talking about how it affects our brain and the different meals, the value, the nutrition value in there, because there is a lot of value to it. And sometimes just having that knowledge, when you know that you're eating a cup of broccoli and you're literally thinking, this is reducing my chances of breast cancer. I mean, there's value to
that. You're engaging
the
senses, aren't you, in all that?
Absolutely, yeah. And that should increase your gratitude to God for providing an answer there.
Yeah.
And a lot of times science will tell us that, like the egg story, perfect example. They told us for years to avoid eggs because it increases your cholesterol. There's so much cholesterol in eggs. And they searched everywhere to find out what is the best thing that can help offset this high cholesterol that we get from eggs. And it's in the egg yolk. And they looked at all the foods, and they found out the best thing to help counteract that is actually an egg white. Yes.
Come on.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
So,
sorry, I didn't mean to give away the punchline, but
yeah, that was totally my
so
story.
Sorry. I know, and I was guessing, but
yeah,
is it because God
exactly
made
right.
provision?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yep.
What do you like for greens, for supplements, for those who can't eat 18 servings a day?
Well, we'll use dynamic greens like green drinks, and green smoothies also work well. So putting in the kale, the spinach in there, I actually do like celery just because it carries a lot of water. And so not as much nutrient value as some of the other ones. But generally
speaking,
it's
anti-inflammatory though, right?
It is, yeah. But it's also, and a watermelon is actually a mild diuretic as well. Mm. So just playing with the fruits and vegetables, making shakes and meals out of it. And they do sell in the marketplace green drinks. I will caution people that there's not a lot of clean green drinks out there. So even though it might be in a nutrition store, it doesn't mean it's clean. So a lot of them get recalled for E. coli and problems with
that.
Oh,
my goodness.
So I do want to put that caveat out there.
What do you think? We have to pray here in a moment, but what do you think of like a blue-green algae, something like that?
I like it.
Chlorophyll, things like
chlorophyll, chlorophyll mimics hemoglobin, so it helps deliver oxygen. Mm. So a lot of people who are fatigued and tired, chlorophyll is a good alternative for many of them.
Wow. Well, we can't thank you enough for your investment in us once again. And I just pray, God, blessing on Synapse, on Dr. Troy and Christine and his massive family. And I pray a blessing on our listeners today, Lord. Every one of us, we want to feel well. We want to show up in life fully alive. And I just pray, speak to each one of us about the tweaks that we need to make right now. Your grace is there for us. Your yoke is easy and your burden is light. Speak to each of us. Show us what to do so we can steward this gift that you've given us. We love you so much. In your name we pray. Amen. Great show. Thanks, Doc, for joining us.
My pleasure.
Always awesome conversation. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson, and in just a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. And remember this, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong, and he's the one who'll keep you strong to the end. Have a great day.